comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. No matter where you are on this planet, regardless of who you are, regardless of what anybody thinks of you, we're glad you're here. Thank you for joining us for talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, the show where you matter. Well, I think I should update you on the high strangeness that I spoke about last night. In fact, I have spoken about high strangeness happening here all around me. I mean, really significant high strangeness happening around me. Really, it's since Monday. And I've talked about it on Monday, I've talked about it on Tuesday, and I'm going to update you now. The high strangeness I told you about yesterday has continued throughout today and even intensified a little bit today. Now, while I do think that it's very likely that something really big either is going on or is just about to start, I think that's the case. Nevertheless, I think the high strangeness of which I speak is diversionary. In other words, I think it's quite possibly a scam. A scam that somebody, is attempting to perpetrate on the UFO community. Now, I'll be talking about this a little bit more specifically in tomorrow's show. But let it suffice to say at this time that it appears there may be an orchestrated effort to perpetrate a scam on the UFO community. A pretty big scam. Now, I could be wrong about that. I bet you I'm not. Anyway, I'll talk about that more in detail tomorrow. It's just that all the pieces fit together like a puzzle with a scam scenario, and they don't fit with the scenario that's being put out for public consumption. So we'll get into that tomorrow. Tonight, my guest tonight is a man well known to the UFO community. I first heard about him via a talk show that was hosted by the undisputed king of talk shows in this genre, Art Bell. Still the undisputed king. And this guest's name is Preston Nichols. You've probably heard of Preston Nichols. He's quite famous for speaking about and writing about and doing some DVDs, some videos. Back before there were DVDs, he was doing videos about the Montauk Project. Some of you have come to the UFO community rather recently, and you may not be aware of the Montauk Project. It's big, and for quite a while it was the biggest news in our genre. It's still big, and we're going to talk with Preston Nichols tonight about the Montauk Project. That includes information about time travel as well, and we're going to talk with him about a few other things. On the other side of this break, we'll be right back. Thank you. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Preston Nichols, and Preston Nichols is a name that many of you are well familiar with. The first time I heard about him, as I said, was listening to the undisputed king of talk show hosts within this genre, Art Bell. And somewhere along the way saw it was an old VHS videotape. Remember the VHS videotapes? I saw a VHS videotape of Preston Nichols and someone else. I can't remember who, but I'm sure Preston will remember. But he's been talking about and writing about and educating people about this thing called the Montauk Project now for a number of years. He joins us tonight. Preston Nichols, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, Kevin, the pleasure is mine.
Preston, just out of curiosity, would you have any idea who that was with you in the VHS videotapes?
Most likely, that was Duncan Cameron.
That's right. That's who it was. Yeah, I could not remember, but I do remember now.
It might have also been Al Bielek as well.
I don't remember Al being in the video, but I do remember Duncan Cameron. So that must be the one I saw. Now, you were involved with something we all know as the Montauk Project. Would you tell us briefly what that project was about?
Well, that started out as research on stealth technology, how to make a boat, later an airplane, invisible, a radar. And they were using quantum physics, and it led up to the point where it was quite obvious that the human being was sensitive to electromagnetic radio waves. And it evolved into a project researching how a human being reacts to radio waves, and eventually we built essentially a mind amplifying device. It had an input device that was called the Montauk Chair. That's what it popularly became known as, which had a group of sensors and antennas and all sorts of other technical stuff that was capable, literally, of picking thoughts out of a person's mind that was laying in the chair. And then it had computers that would align it and code it, and then it went to a big old modified radar transmitter operated in the UHF range of approximately 400 to 450 megahertz and was centered at 435 megahertz. Now, after a while, the thing turned into such a powerful setup where the final amplifier was essentially a particle beam amplifier generating buco watts or joules of energy, that basically the thing became a potentializer, or was actually able to precipitate solid objects out of the background ether. And at that point, it was noted that it was able to literally bend time and evolved into a working time device.
Okay, now I want to talk about that, but explain to us, why was this called the Montauk Project?
Well, it started out, you can say, in the 40s in the Philadelphia Harbor, known as the famous Philadelphia Experiment. It went from there to Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island. Then, because of political reasons, that mind control research wasn't popular with Congress because of MKUltra and that expose that happened in the 70s, the project moved out to Montauk Point, Long Island, on a semi-abandoned Army Air Force base.
Now,
it was out there for seclusion.
Was this conducted above ground or underground?
Initially, it was above ground, but after a while, in order to facilitate cooling of the tubes and the particle accelerator, it went both underground and below ground.
All right, now let's go back to this time travel device. As I understand what you said, this project led to the development of a working time travel device.
Yes.
Were you involved in time travel?
Yes, I was. And I still am.
Well, tell us about time travel. How is it actually possible that you could travel in time? Now, we hear, well, you could travel forward in time, but and you could come back, but you can't go backward in time because there was no time machine back there.
Well, again, this device could generate an open vortex. It would generate a double light cone vortex connected at the tips. And the other end did not have to be connected to a time device of its own. So you're assuming that the machine connects from one machine to another machine in time. It's also possible the machine itself could travel in time. But this is what we call an open vortex time travel device, where you don't need any device at the other end.
Well, I can understand how you might not need another device at the other end in order to get from here to there. But in order to get from there back to here, wouldn't you need one at the other end?
No, because this thing could be programmed to open, to reopen the vortex from, let's say, the future back to the present.
Okay. All right, so you've been involved in time travel. Tell us a little bit about that. Have you gone forward in time?
I have, but not as we know it, forward in time. I know there's some sort of a breakthrough in the future, because I keep running into this person who looks exactly like me, has my fingerprints, has my DNA, and claims to be me out of the future, somewhere in the 2020s, maybe the 2100s. And he also has personal intimate knowledge that no one else would have. And of course, he claims that I make the breakthrough eventually in the private sector, not in the government sector.
And you're an electrical engineer, right?
Yes, so I'm. Basically, my field is engineering and what is known as quantum electrodynamics, which is basically quantum electronics.
All right. Now, you said you're still involved in time travel.
Well, I say that because I keep meeting myself out of the future, which means in the future, I got to be involved in time travel. If I'm not hallucinating this whole thing, which I do not believe I have, because there are other peoples who have met me out of the future.
Now, that's got to be a wild experience for them.
Yeah, the first time I thought somebody was pulling my leg.
How did it happen?
It wasn't until I got his fingerprints, and they matched mine exactly, and I got a sample of his DNA, and it matched mine exactly. And then I started to question him, and he knew intimate details of my life and how I think that no one else would know. So it's either a clone or it is me from the future. If it's a clone, it's a damn good education transfer from me to the clone. So I would put it that the most likely is it's me out of the future, and that eventually I'd learn how to bend time with finesse instead of killing flies with a sledgehammer like we did at Montour Point.
Now, you also, in this Montauk project, were able to travel, I remember you saying this, that you were able to travel to from Earth to a base on Mars.
I personally never did, but I knew people that did.
What did they tell you about this base on Mars?
It was mostly underground. There was some of it outside. And that there was a facility that Earth, U.S. had on Mars.
Did they say anything about what kind of activity goes on there?
It seemed to be archaeological activity. They were very interested in looking at what was an ancient civilization there.
Mm-hmm.
I have to apologize for clearing my throat a lot. I've been having a lot of trouble from the 9/11 disease.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But it's quite all right as far as the show goes. Don't worry about it. All right, now let me ask you. They're very interested in this ancient civilization that used to be on Mars. Did these people tell you whether there were any living survivors still on Mars or in Mars?
Not that I heard about.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear about any living survivors.
Did they tell you anything about this civilization that is being excavated?
It appeared to be some sort of a highly advanced humanoid civilization. It wasn't a bunch of grasshoppers like one science fiction author says.
So they were like us, but highly advanced. Now, when you say highly advanced...
Technologically.
Okay, so... they had, electronics? They had computers? What did they have?
They definitely had some sort of photon-based technology.
That would be light-based.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to remember, the electron and the photon essentially is no different. They're one and the same thing, just different frequency transforms involved. This is why electronics is known as light sciences also.
Okay, so they had technology that was photon-based. That would indicate, I guess, they must have had fiber optics?
I'm not sure. I didn't see much of it.
Mm-hmm.
I only saw what they brought back.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe for us what you saw?
It appeared to be some of the same stuff I saw on the Roswell tapes, which was semi-electronic, photonic-based. It appeared to be somewhat crystalline, optical and electronic crystalline-based. And there was also electromagnetics involved.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that looked like motors that we have today. Well, it looked like a mix between photonics and electronics. We're more electronics today, although we're beginning to go towards photonics. You know, our whole communications network is now photonic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fiber optics.
Well,
buzzword in communications.
The mouse on my computer is optical. You know, they used to be mechanical. They had a little ball that would roll. And now it's an optical reader.
Hit the potentiometers.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's leave Mars, and let me ask you if you heard about people going to any other planets.
Well, in connection with what we call the Montauk Boys, it seemed to be a project. I understand it's an outgrowth of the Monarch Project, which is an outgrowth of MK Ultra, training some sort of psychic super soldiers. And when I find them and deprogram them, they have recollections of fighting battles on other planets and possibly in other star systems.
Did you work with deprogramming these psychic super soldiers?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
And did you... And folks need to know that you also have a degree in psychology.
I started a degree in psychology.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
I just did not agree with professors, and I told my advisor at Stony Brook University, I think this idea of analyzing the mind of man based purely on statistics, I think, is idiocy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I went into electronics.
Okay, so why were you selected at Montauk to work with deprogramming these psychic super soldiers?
My part at Montauk was actually putting their mind structure back together again after they were basically mentally blown apart, the mind fractured, different pieces of it set up to do different things. It was my assignment at the end of it all to try to make them quote-unquote normal. The deprogramming I did later. I was very active in Montauk Boy deprogramming from the early 80s to the mid-90s.
So when we hear stories like, you know, we hear right now Duncan O'Finian and Aaron McCollum talking about having been programmed to be these super soldiers, they would have come through your program somewhere?
Well, from what I've heard and what I've been able to gather, this project for making the super soldiers go back to probably World War II, and it has evolved over the years, starting with brutality and electroshock, as made famous by MK Ultra and the CIA, up to in the 70s when they were trying to use the Montauk Project or Project Red Hawk type technology to see, okay, can we program these young boys using electromagnetics? So the, you know, the Montauk base became like a subsector under it.
Okay, so they may or may not have come through Montauk.
No, they may not have been.
Uh-huh. But does their story sound plausible to you?
Huh?
Does their story sound plausible to you?
Well, the states of consciousness I use with them, I do not believe they can lie. And except for the possible space travel, which I think is plausible, everything else fit right into psychological factors and human factors.
Okay, so
that's one thing I had to decide on my own. Are these kids telling me the truth? Is it some sort of false memory syndrome? Is it some sort of programmed false memory? You know, they're using this wild story of the guy traveling to other planets and battling aliens as a cover for what they really did. I had to consider that. That's why I took a number of them.
Okay, Preston, we have to step away for a break. We have to step away for a break. I want to hear the rest of that as soon as we come back. We'll be back, folks, with Preston Nichols right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Preston Nichols. And we are talking about the Montauk Project and his involvement with it. Preston, when we stepped away for break, you were just beginning to tell us that this group of boys, a group of guys you called the Montauk Boys, and we'll get into what they are in just a moment. But basically, they were super soldiers, and they had to be deprogrammed. And they would tell you stories about fighting aliens on other planets. Is that what you said?
Yes, and they also told me time travel stories involving World War II. And I had to take, I took a number of them deeper and deeper and deeper until I got to their primal level and realized there's nothing, you know, there's nothing else hidden. Because my thought was, okay, this is a false memory planted there to hide something else, where a deprogrammer would go get the false memory and consider that's the whole thing. I took it as far as I could with, you know, quite a few of them.
All right, did you find any of them that told the story about fighting aliens on other planets, did you find any of them to be telling you the truth?
As I said, I took it far enough where I was convinced that they were telling the truth. Like, for instance, one young man in his mid-20s told me that he was able to literally drift through walls when he was doing his thing. And his wife pulls me aside later and says, you know, I encouraged him to go into this because as you were checking him out and you were doing the hand scans and the direct body scans, I saw your hands go into his body.
All right, so what you're telling us...
I saw this fella do it. I saw him go through walls once.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. You're telling us they actually can do this.
This one young fellow could. I don't know how he did it.
Uh-huh.
I've also had another young fellow. I was working with a guy who could literally do some sort of shape-shifting. He started to change into some sort of a cat creature right in front of me. And that was actually scary.
Well, I would think so.
He went into a fit of pain and came out of it.
I would think it would be quite scary. But you know something now, Preston, I interviewed a young man on this show some time ago who claimed to be a werewolf. I won't go into all the story here, but just to cut to the chase, a scientist who is well known to and has been in service to our government on many, many occasions, informed me later that they had checked this kid out and he was the real deal. That he actually could shapeshift. And so now you're telling me you saw somebody do it. That's two stories that I've heard about someone actually being able to shapeshift.
Yes.
Was there anything that you ever encountered while you were working at Montauk that totally, completely surprised you?
Think about that for a bit.
Hard question, I know, because you saw a lot of weird stuff.
I wasn't surprised at the alien involvement. I wasn't surprised at the computer work. I wasn't surprised at the technology. I guess you could say when we first verified it, time travel was very, time distortion was very surprising. Because up to that point, I thought time was immutable.
All right, now, these Montauk boys, let's talk about who are they? Where did they come from? How did they get to be the Montauk boys, and what are they for?
Well, as I said, they appear to be for some sort of a super fighting group. And they were basically boys that the parents allowed to wander somewhat free, did not have tight control, where they could disappear for an afternoon and no one would think anything of it. Also, they basically picked up any homeless kid they could find.
Okay, and what was the purpose for that?
They're training some sort of a fighting group. For some reason, I don't know fully why. I don't know what the actual purpose was. From what I could see, it seemed to be fighting off-planet battles.
You know, this sounds like very much like the plot of the movie and the TV series SG-1. You know, Stargate?
I know what SG-1 is.
Yeah, and
but you'll find those guys are not really psychic. They're just some sort of an elite, some sort of...
Well, they're kind of...
Special forces.
Yeah,
group.
Commandos.
And what's unusual there is that Stargate device, which I can tell you does exist.
Now, wait a minute. Time out! The Stargate device actually exists?
I've seen it.
Does it look anything like the one on the movie?
Quite a bit. And it is ancient. It is some sort of crystalline ancient technology.
Is it functioning?
Yes, sir. I've seen it function. It runs basically on extreme high voltage.
Wow. Now, what do we use it for?
Just as the show itself, the movie and the show, is essentially factual, except for the plots of what they do through the gate. They have identified a whole bunch of other gates, and it is a teleportation device between two points. And yes, you have to have technology at both ends. The technical aspect of the Stargate series is pretty much true. I don't know if they ever found Atlantis like Stargate Atlantis suggests, or whether Stargate Universe they've ended up projecting aboard this ancient ship and they're tooling around space on this ancient ship. But the operation of the device, how it works, what has been described on the show is pretty darn accurate.
How do you suspect that information got out into the into a movie?
Well, what happens a lot of times in the secret sector, let's say you're detecting a security leak. So what you do is you get a hold of some guy that produces science fiction and you hand him the story and you tell him to make it. You know, the X-Files was a prime example. All the data on aliens was being made into science fiction on their X-Files, so if someone in the general public hears it, they think, oh, that's X-Files, or, oh, that's Stargate.
And so you let the truth out, let it get packaged as science fiction, and then people don't think it's real.
Exactly. You got it.
When you first saw... Now, when you first saw this movie, Stargate, or the TV series, the first time you saw it, were you pretty amazed at how accurate it was?
Yeah, I was. At that point, I made contact with Roland Emmerich and said, hey, what the hell gives here? And all he said, he couldn't talk about it. And then the music, that's something else. You know, the music for the original movie, that's quite something else. The tonalities in that are perfect in tune. There's no symphony orchestra that's perfectly tuned. And they claim it's for the London Philharmonium, which at that time in the 90s didn't exist. It exists today.
So where do you think the music came from?
Well, I've been in contact with these... what I call these weirdos out of the future. They come to me and they say, we represent a group you know as the Wingmakers, which is, okay, what's going on here? And when they start handing me technology and information doesn't exist yet, then, what is going on here? And they claim that they made the music and they handed it to this guy, Emmerich, through this guy, David something or other. And they claim that this guy, David something or other, who I've never met, so I don't know, is one of them. I don't know. I don't know.
Preston, you gotta know that's a really strange story.
Isn't it?
It is.
But these beings, whoever they are, handed me a digital sound processor, which at the time, in 2000, was way beyond anything we had. And when I went to patent it and was working with AMD, the government grabbed it and nationalized the patent. We couldn't use it. You know, if you check history, you'll see AMD was announcing the next level in digital processing, digital audio processing, for roughly Christmas time of 2000. And all of a sudden it disappeared. That's because the government said, no, you can't release that to the public. We need that for one of our weapons. You know, they were telling me that I was able to do in about 200 kilobytes of code what it took them 2 to 4 gigabytes of code to do.
Preston, when I talked with you on the telephone, you and I had a conversation, and I said, you know, I've heard about you, and I've heard you, and I know your story. And you kind of broke in, and you said, and now the only question is whether to believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
So you obviously are aware that a lot of your story is beyond the bounds of what a lot of people can wrap their minds around, and that you obviously know there must be a lot of people out there who hear what you have to say, enjoy it as if it's science fiction, but don't believe it's true.
Mm-hmm. I'm well aware of that.
How does that affect you?
In my books, the first thing we say is this is all based upon recollections of people and involved, and people's recollections have a tendency to become distorted, and we don't know exactly what's true, what isn't true. All we know in general is true, and you can read the book either as fiction or fact. We leave it up to the reader. And I'll tell you, especially when I broke into the second timeline memory that I had, where I started to remember my work at Montauk Point, at that point, I was totally doubting myself because I had two recollections for the exact same time period. And I still wonder how much of it's a dream and how much of it's real.
So you were subjected to some kind of mind control as well?
Very possibly. What you will find if you research me on the internet, you'll find that people say, I do know my electronics. And I'm very good in electronics and audio and et cetera. You know, I build a sound system that beats anything anyone else has said they've heard.
All right, we have to step away for a break for just a couple of minutes here. When we come back, let's explore a bit more about time travel and Stargate, and folks can kind of think about whether it's fact or fiction, but I'll tell you something. I've heard a lot of stories about that Stargates do exist. This one beats them all. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Preston Nichols. And Preston, we've been talking about a lot of really, really strange stuff, but I want to go back to the Stargate for just a moment. You said you've seen this Stargate, and you've seen it in operation. When was that?
Say again?
When was it? When did you see that Stargate?
Around 2000 to 2003.
And was it located in the United States?
Yeah, the one I saw was located in the United States.
Are you at liberty to say where it's located?
Let's put it this way. It was up by Boston.
We have heard
no
that...
It's no longer there.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's been moved.
Why was it moved?
Because security was breaking, and where it was, they had to have more real estate. So basically, it got moved on to an old military base.
All right. Are there other Stargates on this planet?
I've heard there's two others.
Where are they?
I've heard there's one down in Antarctica and one over in Russia, or over in the Eurasian area.
We've heard rumors that there may be a Stargate in Iraq, or maybe there was. We've also heard rumors that there may be one in Iran. What do you know about that? Anything?
That could be what I was led to believe was the Russian gate.
Okay. Now, have you seen the one in Antarctica?
No, I haven't personally.
Okay, so you were just told that it was there?
I always saw the one that was in Boston.
Okay. But somebody told you that there were two other gates, is that the deal?
Yeah.
Have you ever been through this Stargate?
Me personally, no.
But you saw people go through it?
I saw the thing turn on. I saw the event horizon turn into water coming out of the quantum ether. Then I saw the vortex form in the water. And I did see people go into it.
Uh-huh.
I have seen people come out of it.
You say you have not seen people come out of it?
Oh, I have, yes.
Uh-huh. Did it appear that there were any kind of ill effects that accrued to them as a result of having been through this Stargate?
I asked that question, and they said so far no ill effects. I was just told it's a scary thing. I'm told it's like you're drowning.
Now, the people that went into this Stargate, that you saw go into it, were they commando types?
Some were scientific types. To me, it looked like it was a pure exploration thing.
Uh-huh.
And I heard nothing on who built these things. I'm not sure they even knew who built these things. Until, the late 90s, I don't think they even knew how to make the thing work.
Do you know where they found it?
As our crystalline-type technology caught up, then we're able to figure out where to put the high voltage to make the things work and how to program it.
Do you know where they discovered it, where they found it?
No, I don't.
Preston, I want to leave Montauk for a moment because we're going to we need a few minutes to talk about something that's coming up, and that is the galactic center passing through the galactic medium. Do you have any information about what to expect as that happens with our solar system?
Yeah, I do. I can give you a monologue on that.
Well, kind of distill it down. We have a few minutes until break. Still, kind of distill it down and give us a thumbnail of what's coming. What should we expect?
Well, the first thing we're going to get is we're going to get some sun problems. When we were at the minimum in 2002, 2003, that was still a higher minimum than any of the maximums we've seen in our recorded scientific history. And now if that's the minimum, my God, what's the maximum going to be? It may be something like the 1859 maximum that actually destroyed our telegraph system.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we're going to see some sort of an EMP effect, probably distributed totally around the planet. Now, there's a recording out of Justin Haywood singing Broken Dreams on, I forget the brand of the records, all I remember has a red label. And at the end of that recording, there's the weirdest noise you'd ever want to hear. It sort of sounds like guitars feeding back, tuning up. And my first thought when I heard it is, my God, that sounds like the noise that you get on an EMP in a nuclear blast. So, being a Native American in the shamanism and meditation, I basically vision quested through my sound system, which we can get into later what that is, and actually projected my consciousness to the noise. And that's when I saw what looked like a gamma ray burst. But then I went and probed into some of the universities up in Albany where I came out, and there was no radiation being registered. We said it's not a gamma ray burst. That led me to the galactic center on my quest, and what I encountered was a vortex with a white hole at one end and a black hole at the other end, where the white hole and the black hole were basically sucking on each other. No, you know, nothing intended to be nasty there. And this forms essentially a dynamic energy accelerator, and it's well known in quantum physics that if you have a dynamic energy field, it has intelligence based upon the strength of the dynamic and the amount of energy involved. And what I saw was almost an infinite dynamic and an infinite amount of energy, and I was actually able to make contact with some sort of intelligence tied to this thing. And at that time, I was beginning to think, this is a being we call God. And that being showed me a scenario where from the combined event horizon, you have this disk of gravitational energy that goes out and fills the entire galaxy, and that weird dude adrift into that disk. And what it showed me was a dissolution of matter and then a reconstruction of matter, almost like a biblical judgment day thing.
All right. We're going to step away for break in 1 minute and 30 seconds. Let me ask you this.
I've had a number of other people over doing the same thing, and they get the same information. I don't tell them beforehand.
All right, well, let me ask you this.
Reality.
Let me ask you a question. When you say you made contact with this intelligence, did it seem to have personality, or is it just raw consciousness?
It was almost mechanical.
Interesting.
Which, of course, some of the work I've done lately, that evolved into five intelligences. And now they're showing five central suns at the center of the galaxy with infrared telescopy. And I'm beginning to now fit the idea that, my God, are we in some sort of a computer-generated simulation from some supercomputer or from our future? I don't know. And I'm wondering if this effect that we're seeing is when our simulated technological level reaches the technological level of the computers generating the simulation. That's got to be a major dynamic acceleration right there.
Either that or a major burnout.
One or the other. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So after you had this contact with this intelligence, you said you asked the question to yourself, is this who we call God? What's your answer to that?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally have the wisdom to figure that out. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what I made contact with. This is why I've had so many other people make the same contacts. You know, I wanted different views. Because I'm still trying to figure who or what have I contacted.
All right, we're going to...
Give me information that's beyond me.
All right, we're going to step away for break. When we come back, we'll pick up there for a few minutes, and then we'll open the phones for the audience. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. If you're joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that made you miss the first hour. But we're glad you're here now. We're talking with Preston Nichols, and we've talked about time travel and Stargate. Not as theories, but as something that he has experienced, as something he has seen. Preston, we were talking about that you found some type of intelligence at the center of our galaxy. You weren't sure exactly who or what that intelligence is, but it showed you that we're going to sort of, I guess, dissolve and then be reconstituted as matter? Is that what you saw?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. It led me to believe that when we enter this gravitational well disk that's coming out from the center of the galaxy, based upon 1 to 5 central suns, which is probably tied to some sort of black hole phenomenon, that the gravity is so strong, it's like entering the event horizon of a black hole, and you basically dissolve. In fact, I'm wondering, would we be going into a black hole at that point, being sucked to the center of the galaxy and spit out the white hole? And going through whatever this cosmic, semi-religious event might be.
Okay, so does this mean that we survive or we don't survive?
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me turn the volume up here.
All right.
Okay, now I can hear you better.
All right, does this mean we survive or we don't survive?
The impression I'm getting is that it's up to us whether or not we survive.
Well, I vote to survive. I vote for surviving.
Mm-hmm. If we make a major effort to solve the world's problem, we'll come through it. If we make a major effort to repair our damaged DNA, we'll come through it. If we don't, if we stay just basically squabbling among ourselves, we're not going to come through it. Only a small amount of people who have the... See, the way it was explained to me by this group that calls themselves the Wingmakers is that we actually have 23 gene pairs, 46 chromosomes. We're supposed to have 24 or 48. The way it was explained to me is the intelligence genetics is somewhat on the dark side, and this 24th pair was put in as a moderating. It would be like our altruism. And some of us have it and some of us don't. And the galaxy critter, or the galaxy being as I call these beings, wants us to have the altruism gene. Because what they're saying is that this added genetics will make us higher evolved, more, you know, more helpful, not warlike, but more peaceful, you know, all this type of stuff that those of us who are for a loving world would like to see.
So how do we get this altered genetics? How do we achieve that?
Well, what they explained to me, the 24th gene pair is submerged into the 23rd. And we basically have to surface the 24th out of the 23rd. Now, medical science has said that the first and second gene pair, medical science is now saying we're supposed to have 24 pairs, and that the first and second are collapsed into each other, which means the Wingmakers are calling 23, 24 what our medical science is calling the first and second.
But so
there is, I have seen backup on the educational TV channels for this. I practically fell over when I saw that.
So we're basically genetic defects right now.
Yes, we are. Most of us are.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to open up the telephone line and invite our audience to join us. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, we would love to hear from you. And you can transport yourself right here to the studio magically with a little device that people sometimes don't realize is a transporter. They usually call it a telephone. So if you use this combination, this code, on your telephone, it will transport you here to the studio. Here it is, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number for the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. So if you need to call me toll-free, you can. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, don't send me a flash message because I won't read it. I won't even see it. We have telephones for you, and let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Yeah, Rusty.
Hi, Rusty.
Hello, Preston.
Hi.
This time travel, do you think it's going to evolve into a thing to where, say, just a normal citizen like me can utilize time travel?
I think Rusty is asking whether or not the common person eventually will have use of time technology.
Right.
I think it's possible, but this makes a tremendous corundum because, you know, there are so many cases where what you do in the past or the future can change everything, and this capability is going to have to be extremely tightly controlled. If you're traveling in time anywhere, you got to be very concerned about what are you going to do. Are you going to, you know, are you going to leave something behind that changes everything and you come back to total chaos, or, you know, are you going to kill your father and you disappear? You know, there's tremendous ramifications to time travel. It scares the bejesus out of me, I'll be honest. I don't look forward to time traveling.
How closely tied is this time travel with, like, a person's own personal psychic, not like psychic ability, but just a psychic?
Does a person have
to be of a certain psychic sense?
Not necessarily, but you got to remember the early version at the Montauk Project used the thought forms of a person in the Montauk chair. And if the person in the chair had the capability of mentally time traveling, it generated the physicality to do it. But this was basically conversion of thought form to reality is what this equipment was. It was basically a mind amplifier. Whatever the person had the capability of doing, this machine could make it happen.
Okay. One more question. The time travel and the Galactic Center event that is supposedly coming up, what is actually the relationship between us figuring out how to do this time travel or having it shown to us at this point and this Galactic Center coming up?
I'm not sure I understand that question because you're breaking up on my phone here. Maybe Kevin wants to.
He wants to know what is the relationship between time travel and our upcoming passage through the galactic medium. Is there any kind of relationship between those?
I don't know for sure. I suspect there is, but I have not been able to quantize that.
All right, fair enough. Rusty, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. Preston, let's take this call and then I'll ask the question after the call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Brian from Burnaby.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Preston. I was just wondering, with the invisibility cloak, what it sounds to me like is the interior of a magnetron. You have rotating magnetic fields, and you also have electric fields, which are, is that an accurate description as you see it, Preston?
would be more like a three-dimensional spherical aspect of that. For the invisibility, the third level of stealth is literally an electromagnetic bubble, where the material inside the bubble is shifted slightly out of our reality. So you really can't see it either electromagnetically or by light. But yeah, I guess the dynamics is pretty much the same, except the magnetron is two-dimensional, forms a circle.
So I guess it wouldn't be too much of an advance from today's technology technology that we know about outside the military world to make such a gadget.
That, again, that second question is breaking up. Maybe Kevin heard it.
Well, just barely, because, Brian, you're not talking directly into your phone. Speak directly into your phone and repeat your question.
Okay, I was just saying that the technology we know outside the military world, we would be very much on the verge of making that because magnetrons are quite a common technology now, especially with the microwave ovens and things. And I was thinking that people could build something like that.
Oh, yeah, I think we could, definitely. I think the level of our science and technology has reached that. It reached it back in the 50s.
I'm talking outside the military world.
He's saying, could the common person build it?
Hmm?
Could the common person build it?
If you can get the parts and the plans.
Ah, and there's the rub. Who's got the plans?
Like, I recently read a description in the Sylvania tube manual of a 6L6 tube, and they're already, in 1955, talking of the potential quantum aspects of the grids in the 6L6 tubes. And this is the stuff I've been playing with for the last 30 years. And there was some understanding going back to 55. That's why I believe the conspiracy to bury vacuum tubes and bring in solid-state devices was because a vacuum tube is a quantum device. And the government doesn't want us to have quantum devices at our fingertips.
Why not, Preston? What's so dangerous about us having quantum devices?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I might as well say it. One of the biggest fears in the world right now is the idea of building a weapon of mass destruction. Right now, our bombs, so to speak, take a very sophisticated technology base to refine the fissionable material to make a fission or a fusion bomb. Now, if you get a really good understanding of quantum electrodynamics, you could go build a weapon of mass destruction on your kitchen table using the parts from what Radio Shack used to sell. This is the fear right there.
Well, I think that would be a legitimate fear.
Huh?
I think that's a legitimate fear.
I think it's legitimate, too.
Yeah. That
so
kind of...
Thin quantum electrodynamics, making a super bomb is easy.
Wow.
Actually, the theory behind the atomic bomb is simple, too. And that's well known, but it's not that easy to get the fissionable materials to either blow it up or start the fusion reaction. This is what keeps every country in the world from not having a nuclear device. They can't get the material, the fissionable material. Look what happens. Iran wants to build reactors for, they claim, power peaceful uses, but the rest of the world thinks they're building more nuclear bombs over there, and they're trying to stop them.
All right. Now, the question I was going to ask you about the Stargate, it occurred to me that I had not asked this question. I asked about, did you know where it came from? Who built it, and so forth.
No, I don't.
But I didn't ask this question. You saw it in operation. You saw people going into it. You saw people coming out of it.
Yep.
Do you have, and you said it looked like sort of an exploration team. Do you have any idea, did you hear or did anybody tell you on the returning, the people that were returning, what kind of mission they had actually been on or where they had been?
No, that whole thing is very compartmentalized.
How were you able to see it?
Say again?
How is it that you were able to see it?
I was brought in as a consultant engineer on the project. That was through some work I did for a little group known as DARPA.
Yeah, I know about DARPA.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, now look, here's another question that I'm sure lots of folks have this question passing through their minds. You're telling us some really amazing information. Now, how is it that you're able to talk about it and nobody comes along and says, Preston Nichols, you've talked too much, so we're going to have to kill you?
Well, I'm not sure. Either the first thing that comes into mind when considering this is how many people are actually going to believe what I'm saying, being based upon what the media is putting out, what the news services are putting out. The other possibility is I may be so entrenched in the fabric of time, if they kill me, everything changes drastically. I don't know. Or it could be that they still need me. So they figure, well, let this guy talk. No one's going to believe him anyway. So we can use his expertise, as every so often they do. But, you know, a lot of people, most people in this world look at Preston B. Nichols as the biggest crackpot in the world.
Does that bother you?
Which is fine by me.
Okay. All right, now...
It doesn't bother me in the least. This maybe is what kept me alive. I don't know.
Preston, have you ever seen an extraterrestrial?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about it?
Well, I've seen the grays, you know, the little grays.
Mm-hmm.
That was out of Montauk. That's what came in when I broke the memory block. And I also was interacting with a critter that looked reptilian, humanoid reptilian, very much like the Star Trek creature that Captain Jerk fought, known as a Gorn. We had one of them. And the creature on Star Trek looked very close. Now, when I started to get too much credibility from the book, you know, Peter Moon and myself, I decided to join the UFO abductee crowd and tell my abductions at 17, where I believe I was taken to a planet called Alderaan, yes, like out of Star Wars. And basically body healed and educated, and I'm technically a Pleiadian consciousness at this point. And I'm beginning to get more and more information, soft evidence that that's true. That you're talking to an alien right now, not in physical form, but in mental form. The Pleiadian Alliance has a non-interference directive. It means we can't interfere directly unless we're in a body which is born here. Then we can interact with the beings on the planet Earth.
All right, so...
Did you hear the change in my voice?
Well, I didn't notice.
Yeah, that's the Pleiadian consciousness coming through. We
right.
do have a collective consciousness that we're all part of and we can talk with like another person.
All right, so who am I talking to? Am I talking to Preston Nichols, the human, or am I talking to Preston Nichols, the Pleiadian?
You're talking with Preston Nichols, the human, because the voice is being generated by the voice technology within Preston Nichols' human body, but you're also talking with the consciousness of one of us from the planet Alderaan right now. It's almost like what you guys call channeling.
Okay, but you don't have to go into a trance.
No, it's not a trance thing. Not at all.
Are you what people refer to as a walk-in?
I like to call it a shove-in. Because when I was on the planet, the original me, which was known as Penny Nichols, up to 17, died. And what I was told is that this consciousness I have now was put in the body, and I like to call it a force-in, a shove-in.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you want to call it.
Do you resent that?
There is some physical backup of this, because up to 17, I was a very sickly child. I had rheumatic fever, and I had a heart murmur, and my parents were told I wouldn't live beyond 24, 25 years of age, and here I am at 64, going on 65, and at 17, I went to visit the local family quack, and he says, he's listening to my heart, he listens to it for about 10 minutes, he says, I can't hear that murmur anymore, it's gone. Now the other thing, I was born with what's known as cerebral palsy, which says the brain's working great, but I had spinal troubles. At 17, that all disappeared overnight. My father, as a kid, used to marvel at how I used tools, because I used tools in a totally unconventional way of holding them, moving them. And all of a sudden, at 17, that all corrected itself. And they say neurological damage doesn't correct itself. So this could be an explanation for what the Pleiadians told me, that they healed and cured my defects.
That's an amazing story, but I mean, I'm not saying that it's unbelievable. It's just amazing. I've heard other stories. We've had people call in and tell us about things like that happening to them. All right, we have a break coming up in just a few seconds. Let me ask our caller, whom I've got on hold, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes, I am.
All right, you hang on, and when we come back from this break, I'll take you first up. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Preston Nichols, and boy, I'll tell you, we have heard some astounding things here tonight. The kinds of things where you have to say, do I believe this or do I not? And nobody can make that decision for you, but we want to get these statements not about Preston, but from Preston. We want to hear from him, and that's what we're doing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking this evening with Preston Nichols. And Preston, we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Tony from Denver.
Yes, Tony.
Mr. Nichols, I want to thank you for your service, first of all.
I can't understand you.
You're going to have to speak up, Tony.
I said, Mr. Nichols, thank you for your service, and I would like to please ask you for your description of time for me. Is it linear, spherical, or maybe does time happen all at the same time?
Well, I think the gentleman is asking about time.
You're correct.
Well, that's probably one of the most difficult things to talk about. I like to view time as the normal people view space. I like to view it's possible to move through time using certain electromagnetics and frequency transforms through the time frequency domain to move through time, and that it's like another place. You got to remember, we in electromagnetics we have what we call a curl, which I won't go into what it is, but you do a double curl, everything is pure imaginary. It means you're going purely into the time domain. It's a DTDF function that you're getting when you're doing a double curl, and this is what you have to do to move through time, is what I believe, is you have to double curl the correct frequency transform that represents where you want to go.
Preston, I don't know what's happened, but your volume is fading away.
Oh?
Yeah, we could barely hear you.
Yeah, and everything's breaking up. I can hardly understand you guys.
All right, does that answer your question, Tony?
Well, could he describe it in one word? Is it linear or spherical?
Spherical.
Okay,
it would
thank
be
you.
A sphere.
All right, thank you. 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. And we would love to hear from you. And if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. We have Mark from New Zealand says, your guest is big on generalizing with no specifics. Your guest has described the process of opening, creating a double cone vortex as a means to be able to time travel. How does an individual enter or use this vortex to transport themselves to another time? Okay, how do you physically do that?
Well, basically, are you asking how to generate the vortex or how to use it?
How do you use it?
Well, basically, the energy is pounded down to the center of the particle, the last particle accelerator. Basically, a vortex opens, which the magnetics from the delta antenna direct how the vortex opens, how the two tips connect together, and where it opens, where the other end opens into, and basically, you jump into the vortex, it's like you're dying. You're going down to nothing, and then you're being recreated again.
Okay, so you physically walk into this vortex.
Walk or jump. Well, we had a Montauk. It was vertical on the floor. So you jumped in it like you jump in a pool. It was the scariest thing I've ever been through.
What does it feel like?
For a very short period of time, it's the worst pain you could ever imagine. And it's the most fright you could ever imagine. It's like passing through nothing. It's like you're being squeezed down to nothing, and then you're being re-expanded to what you were.
Well, now, Preston, this sounds a lot like a description of what we see when we watch Star Trek, and they go to the transporter room.
Yeah, but that they generate a plane of energy that travels through the person and dissolves the person. They capture the frequency transforms that the matter represents and the soul represents, transmit that, and then potentialize the other end. That does not appear to be double light cone transportation. See, when you take two light cones, or you take two cones and you put them tip to tip, you're going from one open end, you're compressing down and down and down to the minimum opening at the tip, passing into the other one, and then opening up again.
All right, now when a person does this time travel, let's say that you are going to do this time travel, and you and I both walk into a room where they generate this double cone, and you step into it, or you jump into it, would I see you disappear?
Yeah. You would see me. Oh, I saw the people go down into the cone and disappear.
Did you see anybody come back?
Yes, I did.
Are there any ill effects from this?
Oh, yeah. If the equipment isn't working perfect, forget it. You might come back as only God knows what.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when we would have people return every so often, somebody would come back totally distorted, totally deformed, or we lost them entirely.
Did that happen frequently?
In the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But they finally got the transforms and the algorithms within the computer system working well enough to keep it all under control. When I had to use it myself, it scared the piss out of me. You know, to even consider it. Because I had some knowledge of what the thing was doing, and I didn't want to go through that. But it was easy to go through that, or we'll shoot you.
So the people that were the early time travelers, the ones that were experimenting, they were not doing so willingly?
Well, I think they got a lot of people and just told them go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Kevin. Preston, thinking about the mind amplification technology and people who are disabled, will that technology ever become commercially available so that people can use it if they have no other means of expressing themselves?
It's being experimented with right now. It's in the experimental stages, so sure, it should become available, I would guess, maybe 5 to 10 years.
Where do I sign up for the tests?
I didn't get that.
I'd like to know if I could sign up for those tests, because I have a slight disability that prevents me from doing almost anything physical.
I don't know where you would sign up for that. I guess watch the internet and look for announcements.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Brent.
All right, very welcome.
623-444-5889. Preston, a lot of what you've told us about sounds like it produces some rather dire physical effects. Were you involved in anything in this Montauk project that produced very positive effects?
I would say the knowledge itself I put to positive use.
How would time travel be put to positive use?
Well, a lot of what they did was looking back through history, doing historical research on what happened in history, trying to get the truth.
Yeah.
And also, I know they were trying to go into the future to bring back technology. That didn't work all that well. The future connection through the Montauk Project was sporadic at best.
Why was it sporadic?
I don't know. I wasn't involved in the algorithms and the computer code part of it. Although the computers they were using, we have on our desktop now, which leads me to believe they probably got it working fully now.
So would you suspect that they have successfully gone into the future and brought technology back?
Very possibly.
But you have no specific knowledge of that?
No, that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Once I left in 83, I have not had any further involvement in that aspect of it.
Have you, at any time since you've been out talking about all of this, have you ever been harassed by any men in black or government suits?
Yes, I have.
Can you tell us about it?
I would not care to really go into that.
All right.
There's been a number of attempts on my life. There has been, I have been a millionaire a number of times. It's been very expertly taken away from me. I have not been allowed to get anywhere in business, so I would have a financial base to deal from. When I dropped out of this project in the early 90s, I basically retired, and they've kept me pretty much poor, living on social insecurity and a pension. And most of my business failures, they work and then they fail. So that would say to me it is harassment.
So you would think that's been not an accident, but it's been orchestrated?
Probably both. Probably is both accidental. Some of it's my fault. Some of it's been orchestrated.
Where do you go from here, Preston? What's next?
Well, right now, I'm researching how to bring a frequency pattern out of the non-physical mind that has the capability of regenerating our DNA. As it sits right now, the Kundalini energy flows, to go metaphysical, flow up and down the spine and keeps the testes in the human male and maybe the ovary in the female young to produce children up until the 60s. I know men can, and some women can produce children. If we can bring this energy pattern that keeps the gonads regenerated through the whole body, I think we can age regress. And I would say that, and what to do about the coming problems, EMP, and whatever this Ravidic phenomenon is that's heading, that seems to be driven by some super intelligence.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we will return right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach, ladies and gentlemen. That means we only have a few minutes left in this show. And if you have a question or comment for Preston Nichols, then you need to dial the telephone. And you need to do it right now, because I've got time, I think, for one call, maybe two. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is, in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. And we also have available, for those who are outside the USA and Canada, the flash message option on my website. Preston, do you... When you go out and you talk to groups, when you speak to groups about all of this stuff, do you find that most people accept what you say, or are they suspicious of what you say? What kind of reaction do you get?
I would say it's about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people believe, they tell me that it does their belief system, and a lot of people tell me it doesn't. I would take a guesstimate, it's about 50-50.
And that doesn't, and by, that doesn't bother you, huh?
By the way, I am open to communications. You can call. You can get my number off the internet or out of the phone book. I live in Cairo, New York.
That's interesting. Cairo in Arabic means Mars.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, now...
And there's underground pyramids here.
There are underground pyramids in Cairo?
Yeah.
Is this a well-known fact?
No, we found them on my property with ground-penetrating sonar. We saw the faces of it.
Uh-huh. Have you written any articles about that, or are there any photographs of the sonar readings or anything like that?
No, there isn't.
When did you discover that?
Say again?
When did you discover that?
In 93, when I first moved in, I had an associate come up from Fort Meade with the underground sonar unit, and we ran over the whole property. And we found caves and the and there's two underground pyramids.
How come you haven't written any articles about that?
I really don't want to.
Oh, okay. That's a fair enough. That's fair enough. Just don't want to. Preston, what's the possibility that you're not from this time?
I don't know.
Is it possible?
Oh, I guess it's possible.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem plausible to you?
I can be traced back to Southside Hospital in 1946 as a baby.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And I look exactly like my father.
Fair enough. Well, the reason I ask that question is because what you told us about meeting yourself from the future. And I was wondering if maybe you're from the future, traveled back here, and got stuck here.
Oh, for all I know, the original me, something happened major to me at 17 in 1963.
Mm-hmm. And you see that as a very positive thing.
Yeah, it's been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd be alive today.
Do you recall being on Aldebaran?
Sort of.
What do you recall
about?
I've been
in this business for years in my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the name Aldebaran, or Aldebaran, Alderaan.
Alderaan.
I had that name years ago before George Lucas put out Star Wars.
What do you remember about the planet?
Hmm?
What do you remember about being there?
Basically, very ecologically appointed. It looked like the flora, the fauna, and all that was integrated into the structures. Other than that, it's pretty much like here.
And the people there, do they look like us?
Yeah, they look like it was all I saw there was tall Nordics. Blonde hair, blue-eyed, they were about 7-8 foot tall. I wish I had that body now.
All right, now you're pretty tall yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, 6'2".
Uh-huh.
I'm 6'1" now. You know, I shrunk a little.
Out of all of the experiences that you've had and the things that you've seen, the things you've told us about tonight, what do you think the most important piece of information is? What is it all about? What do we need to know?
I think it's about what's coming and how to get through it.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes. What's coming?
Yeah, that's the most important research any of us can do.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes. In that couple of minutes, can you tell us what's coming?
Well, as I said, we're going into some sort of major, major change in our physicality. It appears to be coming around 2018 to 2020 in actuality, although the 2012 business going into 2013 appears to be sun-driven in the form of an EMP that wipes out most of our electronic technology, since it all is what we call CMOS-based.
All right.
So we could be going back to the Dark Ages, go back in like the mid-1800s. And, of course, our whole power grid structure on the planet is controlled by CMOS technology, which is, you know, they say that they got the whole infrastructure all protected, but it's only protected from what was measured from nuclear devices being shot off in the 50s and by laboratory experiments using capacitive discharge. I'm not convinced that we've even tested any of this stuff against what's coming. As an engineer, I would take a look at the whole thing and say, maybe our CMOS technology will survive. I don't know, because I'm not sure what the nature of the electromagnetic event really is.
But you see that coming in 2012 to 2013.
Yeah. We're already seeing magnetic surges. I have an old-style TV with a manual degausser, and it's been here for 5 years, never gave a burp. This past summer, the shadow mass has been getting magnetized, and I had to push that button quite often to degauss the TV. That says to me we're getting magnetic surges, we're getting more sprites, we're getting now an electromagnetic component above the Earth. They're going up to about 650 megahertz, which we never had in the past. There's no question something's coming. Something's coming related to the sun, and something's coming from whatever this phenomenon from the center of the galaxy. See, you got to remember, right now, we're lined up with the center, but the sun is in between us and the center. And the sun is taking the brunt of whatever this energy phenomenon is, and what happens when the sun moves out? We then get directly hit. And I would like to guess at what could happen, but I really don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if this whole galaxy being is my imagination, although other people have talked with the same critic.
All right, Preston, I want to thank you for being with us. Stay on the phone with me for just a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. That's a wrap for this evening, and it's time for me to say, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.